Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, Frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Stu does America.
Welcome to Stu Does America. Dan Andrews is going to be here as well to end racism in the WNBA. It should probably take us only a couple minutes. No big deal. The House has passed Donald Trump's Big Beautiful Bill, which is actually what they're calling it. Like, the official name of the bill is the Big Beautiful Bill. We'll take a look at what's actually in that. But we're going to start by doing Biden's Bad Book Week, the final chapter. Yes, we spent all week going over Biden and all the stuff that's coming out of these books that's going on. And I will say, you might say, you know, like, look, I've had enough of Joe Biden. We know the guy could, he had cognitive issues, and he did in serious ways. I will say, though, if you think this is the final chapter, you might remember this is the final chapter was the fourth version of Friday the 13th. And you might say, OK, well, it's the final chapter. And that's what we thought when Friday the 13th, the final chapter came out. Unfortunately, there's like, what, 10 other movies after it? So we could be doing, there's even more books to come out. We didn't really go through too much of the initial book that came out, which Amy Parnes was one of the co-authors on. We talked to her, but we didn't do many shows on it. We could do another like 50 shows on all the stuff coming out about Joe Biden, but we'll try to get to as much as we can here today. This is an interesting editorial that came out in the reaction to all these books from The Washington Post. Again, another institution that really held water for Joe Biden through this period, now coming out and changing their minds. And again, let me give you this, my order here of people I'm mad at. You've got at the very top, the people around Biden himself and the people around Biden saying, hey, you should keep running. You got all that. The government people who probably committed crimes hiding this. Those are the people I'm most concerned with. After that, you have people who are like, totally in denial the entire time of this, and they were awful, and they're still holding that line today. There's some of those people still left. Beyond that, you have people who are kind of really, really in the middle of it, and those people who were saying that he was totally fine, sharp as a tack, and at least now have started to admit that wasn't true. That's where I would put the Washington Post. Jake Tapper, I'd probably put a level even below that, who is, he had some bad moments, but wasn't really leading the charge on that, and has certainly now actually written a book, not just reacted to a book about this and trying to get the record straight. And then, of course, at the very bottom of that, which is the best place to be in this particular stack, would be people like Alex Thompson, when you're talking about mainstream journalist, the co-author of Jake Tapper's book, who was actually reporting on it on the time, I think, pretty accurately. So there's my stack. Okay, Washington Post in the bad side of the stack. Okay, but they do have a good op-ed today. If Biden was too frail for his job, voters should have been informed. What a standard we're being required to hit here. Let me give you some of this, though, because it's not from just like one author. It's from the editorial board. It now seems that for a considerable time, Biden might have lacked the stamina and cognitive capacity the job demands, and that his family and closest aides concealed this from the public. Their apparent decision to put personal loyalties ahead of their duty to the country must be reckoned with. A legal mechanism should be considered to ensure that this doesn't happen again. This is what I'm saying. It's not even just holding the people who did it accountable. We need to codify this legally. There needs to be some sort of way for us to know, even if it's just access to all these medical reports that and certain amount of tests that need to be done on a regular basis for the president of the United States, I'm for that. This has, again, happened with about 20% of our presidents since Woodrow Wilson. That's too high. Okay, too high. Democrats might well want to put the Biden experience behind them. Republicans might be overeager to submit it to further criticism. Ideally, Congress will create a sober bipartisan commission to investigate ways to maintain transparency about the president's health, mental and physical. Perhaps some objective cognitive testing should be required in addition to a physical examination with the results made public annually. Officials in both parties have a responsibility to enable their voters to select standard bearers who are up to the job. In the case of the former president, top Democrats turned a blind eye to Biden's limitations until the debate made that problem impossible to ignore and activated their political survival instincts. And like, that's kind of true in some ways. I think there's a lot more denial, a lot more obfuscation during that period than just, hey, we didn't realize this until right now. But I will remind you, that not only for weeks after the debate did a lot of people come out, you know, I know George Clooney, I guess, is excluded from this, but a lot of people on the Democratic side in politics came out and said, actually, it was a good performance. Actually, he was fine. Actually, he was tired. Actually, he was had a cold. Actually, and said he's actually fine. The Biden administration itself released a statement weeks after that said, hey, I'm still running. There's no doubt in my mind this answer has been given. In fact, even after he resigned, there was no call from places like the Washington Post for him to get out of the presidency. We resigned the candidacy. We sat here with this guy still running the country for months. That was a massive problem, and so one we have to reckon with as well. National Review asked the question, which is interesting, Rich Lowry, where's KJP? That's a good freaking question. We haven't talked about it all that much. We should have an answer to that. By the way, she should be testifying in front of a congressional subpoena at some point very soon. KJP had to know Biden's real state, and she could have pocketed the glowing profile she'd gotten in the press and her status as historic first at any point and made a graceful exit. Instead, she still chose to stay and lie. She wasn't the most important part of the conspiracy. In mafia terms, she wasn't a mob boss or a mob lawyer, but a mob spokesperson who loyally and eagerly embraced her role. It's true, and she lied to the American people constantly. That was her role. Again, she doesn't work for Joe Biden. That role is a job that works for us. The press secretary is a job that's supposed to be looking out for our best interest, not the president's best interest. It just never seems to really happen. Speaking of, let me ask a question here. Might be a little uncomfortable, but speaking of KJP, how did she get that job? She got that job. She was handpicked by one Jen Psaki. Jen Psaki in the news. Jen Psaki providing political cover for Biden's ghost presidency. This is a story in The Federalist. And what's fascinating about that, she did do this. She said how wonderful he was and all that time. And then kind of out of nowhere, she just bailed. Just left earlier than you would have expected it in a high profile job like that. She just kind of bailed and was like, oh, I'll just go on MSNBC on the weekends. Like, who does that? You know who does that? A person who knows that this is about to fall apart. OK, this is speculation on my behalf here. But I will say I'm guessing that's a big part of the reason why she left in the first place. She knew this was going on. She knew this was going to be a disaster. She knew lots of problems were coming. She didn't want to have to answer questions about this constantly, thinking that, again, the media might do its job, which it didn't really wind up doing, except from Steve Doocy, who was asking her questions about it. And also handed it off to someone she knew was terrible at the job, which was Corinne Jean-Pierre, thinking, I'm going to look good in comparison. And she did look good in comparison, frankly, to KJP. So I guess a pretty shrewd move. I don't know if this exonerates her, but it's a pretty shrewd move, I suppose, by Jen Psaki, if that's the way that it went down, which I suspect it was. Congress needs to grill Joe Biden about whether he was actually president. This is from The Federalist. A fascinating take. Can you imagine that hearing? Can you imagine Joe Biden himself up there, like not being able to speak? And that, this would be ugly. I honestly think while it's probably appropriate, I almost feel like it should be done behind closed doors because I think it'll come off as mean, frankly. It's why Robert Hur was like, yeah, this guy's just an elderly man with a poor memory. It's not going to play well because people are going to feel bad for the guy. I think that's possible in a situation like this, but there are too many questions germane to the very health of our republic that make investigations, congressional hearings, and should the evidence lead, can criminal charges an absolute necessity? For instance, who is actually running the country? Who's driving U.S. policy? Really good questions. Additionally, how long did the president have cancer? If it was missed, how is that possible given his access to the world's best health care and most diligent monitoring? And more telling, if it was not missed, then who made the call to withhold this vital bit of information from the American people? By the way, the book, and that's kind of, you know, where all this stuff sprouts from, Original Sin, has an interesting sort of view on that White House. They call it, by the way, the Politburo. That was what it was called internally. Basically, you know, the communist propaganda upper echelons of government that did everything they could to protect the party. And in this case, Joe Biden. And it was, you know, a lot of people revolved around Joe Biden, his close advisors, and Jill Biden and her close advisors. In fact, the two main people are basically Joe Biden's closest advisor, Donilon, and I'm going to forget the name, but Jill Biden's closest advisor. Off the top of my head, I don't have it. But they were kind of enforcing everything here. who was making the actual decisions? I mean, a lot of people obviously came in and did have input in that, the advisors, the cabinet members. But some of the cabinet members said they weren't having meetings with him for months and months and months, sometimes almost a whole year with no meetings with the president of the United States. These are cabinet members. At least three of them are quoted in the book. I mean, for all the stuff that, you know, this is why I keep coming back to the Jake Tapper thing. It is a story related to this, but it's not the story. And the reason why it's frustrating a little bit is there's a lot in this book that is really important for the country to understand to make sure this doesn't happen again and to punish the people who are responsible for it. So making this only about Jake Tapper is, I just feel like we're missing the boat a little bit there. A little bit more from the Federalist. Finally, if Biden was mentally and physically incapacitated when his staffers were auto-penning more than 8,000 acts of clemency, then are those edicts even valid? After all, in contract law, non compos mentis is grounds for voiding any agreement. Does the same legal principle apply here? Legal action is needed to find out. I agree with that. Anything that he did, and at the very least in the last couple of years in office, I think has to be looked at. Some people looking even at the appointment of Ketanji Brown Jackson as a situation where, I don't know, was that legitimate? It's hard to know at this point. Jake Tapper has been going around doing the media rounds. There's a rumor that he's coming on next week. Maybe him and Alex Thompson, either here or on radio. We'll kind of see where that goes. Tapper tells Morning Joe host that Biden made targeted effort to convince Scarborough he was fit for office. I want to give you this clip because it's kind of fascinating. He's kind of taking it right to Joe Scarborough, who was, remember that stack I told you about at the beginning? Scarborough is the very bottom at it, the worst of the worst. We've played the clip for you 100 times where he says Joe Biden is better than ever just a few months before his entire brain breaks on live television. Here is Tapper with Scarborough.
In your specific case, Joe, our reporting indicates that Joe Biden, who, as you know, is a frequent viewer of the show, saw when David Ignatius wrote that column in, I think, August 2023, saying that Joe Biden should not run for re-election because of what he had been hearing.
Right.
And he came on this show and you guys had a robust conversation about this. You largely agreed that you'd been hearing things about this, but that there was really no alternative, that Kamala Harris was not up to the job. That's what Democrats were telling you behind the scenes. Joe Biden saw that. Joe Biden said to staffers that he wanted to convince you that you were wrong. And he focused on you like you were a constituency, like you were farmers in Iowa, like you were the Kiwanis Club in New Hampshire. And he made sure that you thought made sure that you thought differently. I think he did this with a couple people. I think he did it with Meacham. He might have done it with Evan Osnos. He knew that there were people that had to be convinced that he was fine. And he tried to prove that to you.
And it worked. By the way, I think Tapper's really good in that clip here, showing it right to his face, saying, yeah, basically, like, they saw you as the dupe, Joe. And it worked. Joe Scarborough came out and he did things like, oh, he's so cogent. He's more cogent than ever. By the way, Scarborough did address that viral clip. Here's what he said.
I said that this was Biden at his best.
Sure.
That's what I saw.
I don't doubt
what other people saw. I was obviously wrong. So I'm not sure what my takeaway is here the next time. But if you're around a guy for hours and hours and hours, I guess the question is, what's the takeaway here?
What's the takeaway here, Joe? I'm not sure what my takeaway is here. I don't know. That you're a moron? Maybe it's that everyone around you sees you as a joke, that you can be easily convinced into things that no human being could possibly be convinced of? That you're gullible? Could that be the takeaway here, Joe? What should you do next time? Gee, I don't know. Not believe everything the White House tells you when it's a Democrat? Maybe be a little skeptical of politicians who come in and tell you things that every single person on earth is noticing is wrong. That one single clip should have dissolved his entire career. And somehow he's still on television, talking to fewer people in the audience than we're sitting around the table. All right. Dan Andros is going to join me next. We're going to talk about someone who has a lot of people who actually watch her every single time she goes out on the basketball court, Caitlin Clark, and the racial controversy in the WNBA. Next. America. Actually, I might talk about the big, beautiful bill first, and then we'll get to Dan Andrews. How about that? All right. If you're a homeowner, you really need to hear what is going on in the world of cybercrime, because you're probably like, I'll just lock my doors. I'll put up an alarm system. What am I going to do? Well, there's a real growing threat that most people aren't even thinking about. Criminals are stealing homes' titles, and they are using the equity that they get in that transaction. And they're getting loans, getting cash sent to them while you're living in the house, not even know this is going on. They forge your signature on a document. They attach a fake notary stamp. They file it for a small fee. And suddenly your home's title is not your home's title. So when you're thinking about all of this, when's the last time you checked your home title? Probably never, right? Like, that's, I think, the answer of almost everybody. And it's exactly why I partnered with Home Title Lock. I love these guys. HomeTitleLock.com. They use the promo code STU. You'll get a free title history report. You can see if you're already a victim. They will help you. They'll help you get a free trial. They'll help you protect yourself against home title theft. And they've got this free trial going on for their $1 million triple lock protection. This includes 24/7 monitoring of your title, instant alerts to any suspicious activity. And if fraud ever does happen, they'll cover up I think it's $1 million in legal and restoration costs to make it right. It's HomeTitleLock.com. HomeTitleLock.com. Use the promo code STU. It's HomeTitleLock.com. Protect yourself. Protect your home. Protect your equity. Protect your financial legacy. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. Use the promo code STU.
Bezahlen läuft für dich sowieso nur mit dem Handy? Dann hol dir doch was von deiner Kohle zurück. Denn in allen Restaurants und Bars gibt's jetzt 5% Cashback, wenn du mit PayPal zahlst. Tap dir mehr mit PayPal. Alle Infos gibt's auf paypal.de. 5% Cashback nur auf Einkäufe vor Ort in Restaurants und Bars in Deutschland bei kontaktloser Zahlung mit PayPal. Gültig vom 2. Juni bis 19. Juli 2026 für die ersten 850.000 berechtigten Kunden. Maximal 15 Euro Cashback pro Konto. Es gelten Bedingungen auf paypal.de.
Well, the big, beautiful bill, which, by the way, is the actual name of the bill, has now cleared the House in a victory for Republicans, advances to the Senate. Every Democrat on the floor voted no, as you'd expect. Also knows where Representative Warren Davidson of Ohio and Thomas Massie of Kentucky. Massie, a libertarian type. We knew he was going to be a no kind of from the beginning on this. Andy Harris, who chairs the conservative House Freedom Caucus, voted present. Final vote was 215-214. There were also, I mean, it was a really bizarre vote, frankly. So you've got two no's on the Republican side. I think they could have lost four. You got a one present, which is kind of counts as a, in between, right? And then you had two representatives. Schweikert was one of them. I can't remember the second one, who just didn't come to vote. They just didn't vote. That made it 215-214. The only reason it succeeded with all those kind of fallaways was the death of one Democratic representative who died of, I think it was colon cancer as well. So because he was not there to vote, it was 215-214, just a crazy thing. And we talked about this a little bit, I guess it was last week. There were multiple different groups. How do you convince these groups to come along? You have the budget hawks, and you have the groups that want green energy, and the groups that want SALT deductions, and the groups are moderates. How do you get those groups to work together? Because if you give a giveaway to the SALT people, which is the state and local tax deduction people, the caucus there had, I think, six people in it. If you give them that, which they did, you might lose some of the deficit hawks, which they wind up doing. So it's a very delicate dance. You have all these different levers you can pull. You can give all these giveaways. You can give this person this thing. You give this person this thing. You try to buy their vote, essentially. This is how these things operate all the time. It's just much worse when you have only a four-seat majority. At the end of the day, you have a second lever that you can pull. All these giveaways are one thing. The second lever is Donald Trump coming in and saying, I want this, do it. And that's basically what happened. Donald Trump came in, he went to them and harangued them at the House, and then released a statement, said anyone voting against it, this is the ultimate betrayal to MAGA. So I say all of this to kind of set up this one thing, which is we always do this. I do it too, where we get all mad at quote unquote Republicans for not passing what we want, and they don't go far enough. The real reason they're not passing what we want is what you need is a 30 and 40 seat majority so that you can lose all the moderates and get, quote unquote, what we want. But another part of this is, at the end of the day, Donald Trump gets what he wants here, right? Like Donald Trump, when he comes in and does these things, the party completely folds to whatever he wants. This is his party. He controls it. And, you know, his priority here were certain things. He wanted to make sure his 2017 tax cuts were maintained. He wanted to make sure he got no tax on tips and no tax on overtime, promises he made during the campaign. He wanted border spending, and he wanted, you know, some green energy cuts and things like that. Those are all, most of those things I like, and I'm right on board with. He's not a detail guy, though, when it comes to this stuff. And, like, to him, he's just not concerned about the spending stuff like, you know, I am and some of the people we have on the show. Maybe you are. That's just not his top priority. He's going after the big ticket items that matter to him. And that's what he went after. And when he wants those things, he goes in and he slaps people around and they do it. That is the Republican Party today. You might love that. You might hate it. But it's the reality here. We act as if the Republican House is this big problem because all these Republicans are always trying to stop him. The bottom line is they do pretty much whatever Trump says. Yeah, he doesn't. There's a lot of detail stuff that he doesn't care about, so he doesn't really hit them on that stuff. At the end of the day, this is what happens in this party right now. That this is Trump's party. He's, you know, he tried to take over the Republican Party, move it to a different direction, this sort of MAGA direction, and it quite obviously has worked really well. So that's where he is, and that's kind of what this bill is. I what I think about the bill specifically, well, there's a lot in it. Here's what's in the big domestic policy bill to deliver Trump's agenda. This is from the New York Times. I'm sure it'll be totally fair. The legislation will slash taxes. Okay, that's true. Providing the biggest savings to the wealthy. That's just nonsense. I mean, people who are at the bottom of the income scale don't pay the tax. So you can't give them a tax cut. Everybody knows this. If you give anyone a tax cut, it's always going to benefit people who actually pay taxes. It will steer more money to military and immigration enforcement, accurate, while cutting health, nutrition, education, and clean energy programs to cover part of the cost. That is partially accurate, but, you know, a little bit of an exaggeration. Republicans are pushing the package through Congress using a special process known as budget reconciliation. This is why they only need 50 votes in the Senate. It allows them to steer around a filibuster and win approval without Democrat votes. Tiny majorities in both chambers, they can afford to lose no more than 3 Republican votes in both the House and the Senate. And if all Democrats oppose it, which of course they will, every member present and voting. So we know, I mean, I think right off the bat, you're going to lose Rand Paul. I don't think there's any chance he's voting for this bill. So really, it's 2 that they are going to lose. Markets did react to this. They didn't like it all that much. Bond market shudders as tax bill deepens. Deficit worries. You know, look, this is the deficit stuff is real. It's a real worry. We're getting downgraded with our credit because of all the spending, and we're not doing enough to cut spending. Cutting taxes, I think, is the right thing. And I think that's positive. Certainly letting the Trump tax cuts expire would be devastating to the country. So overall, what I would say about this bill is it's a massive, massive bill. There is a lot of good in the bill. You're going to find a lot of good things in this bill. There's a lot of bad in the bill. There's a lot of everything in the bill. And that's kind of where we stand right now on the big, beautiful bill. Well, we've been talking about money. Let's talk about Constitution Wealth. These people are true professionals. They share your conservative values as well. They specialize in helping patriots hold corporations accountable for their political behavior. The parallel economy is something we talk about a lot, right? And it's a way to approach the economy while saying, hey, I don't need to agree with everybody I do business with, but like I'd like my big investments to align with common sense, right? The things that I actually believe. They have strategies that align your portfolio with your principles without sacrificing the returns. When Americans redirect dollars away from companies pushing for harmful agendas, these companies notice, and your investments should work as hard as you do while reflecting your beliefs. Take control of the future of America. Don't get complacent. Visit ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze. ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze. Get a free consultation today. Align your principles with your investments. It's ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze. Constitution, a registered investment advisor. You should review Constitution Wealth's disclosures at constitutionwealth.com to understand their services and fees. All investing involves risk, including the risk of loss. I am a client of the firm, and this is a paid endorsement. My opinions, as always, however, are my own.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
I am joined now by Dan Andros. He's a managing editor at CBN News and host of CBN's Quick Start podcast. You can subscribe to that. You should subscribe to it wherever you get your podcast. Dan, thanks for coming on, man.
All right, thanks, Stu.
Let's talk a little bit about Caitlin Clark. This is one of your favorite topics, one of mine as well. We text about this often, honestly, probably more than almost anything else, because it really is infuriating. You have this league that literally no one cared about for three decades of no one caring. And finally,
it's a subsidy league.
It's
literally a government subsidy, but NBA, the NBA has subsidized this league so that it exists.
The NBA is profitable.
Because we need to be nice to women or something.
Yeah, they're trying to get on this bandwagon. And look, it may be worth a shot. It obviously basically didn't work for a long time, but it was really difficult to cancel the league, I think, for the NBA, because you're admitting something there that they don't necessarily want to admit. So they keep it going. And, you know, hey, all of a sudden there's some interest. In fact, some interest around this one player in college, Caitlin Clark, who somehow, despite us mocking the WNBA for our entire lives, has actually made us interested in watching at least this one individual player. She comes into the league. She's this big star. You'd think there would be nonstop. It would be annoying the adulation she would be getting from the league. It would be annoying because they would be building her up all the time and talking about her all the time and giving her every benefit of the doubt. You'd think that's the way they'd handled it because she's single-handedly made the league into a thing. That has not been the way they've handled it at all.
No. And also, not only, you know, you'd think she'd get some adulation or whatever, and then she doesn't get it. She's not only been a great player and just a generational talent on the women's basketball side of things, but she also handles all of these situations perfectly.
Yeah.
She just stays above it. She doesn't get frazzled by any of it. But this latest kerfuffle with Angel Reese, because they played their opening night. I mean, the WNBA apparently are learning. They scheduled the Fever to play Angel Reese at the beginning of the season to kick things off, and the Fever destroyed them. But there's this one play where Caitlin Clark does a kind of a hard foul, but I mean, a blatant basketball play. Somebody has a wide open layup. You don't want to give them the layup. You just hack them. And that's what happened. And Reese completely flops and comes running at her like a mad woman. And now they're saying, I mean, this to me, Stu, is Jussie Smollett part two. Because Angel Reese embarrassed herself on this play. Completely embarrassed herself. Absolutely. She flopped, number one. I mean, Caitlin Clark is not the biggest girl in the WNBA. Like, you know, she's not throwing people around. That's not her thing. And she goes flying after this moderate hack and then comes in like she's so mad about it, which to me was so ridiculously ironic for a number of reasons. Number one, last year it was this same team. I don't know if you remember, Stu. We probably talked about it. Chenity Carter, I think her name is, a teammate of at the time of Angel Reese's. Out of nowhere, just blindsides Caitlin Clark, calls her a B. You could see her mouth it on camera and just slams into her blindside cheap shot. And like Angel Reese and them are after the game in the press conference. You can look it up. It's still up there. They're like, it's just a basketball play. We're just competitors.
Yeah. But and not only that, she jumps off the bench at the moment and cheers it on. I mean, she's excited
about it. Cheers it on. Mm-hmm. It cheers it on. And then you get a mild hack from her and you act like the world is coming to an end. You idiot. I mean, I am sorry, but this Angel Reese is just a moron. I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah.
I mean, or she's a genius and she's just milking her way to get fame off of Caitlin Clark. Because this all started, Stu, the supposed beef between them. And now remember, Caitlin Clark cares about none of this. Like she cares absolutely zero about Angel Reese. Like I'm sure she has absolutely no concern about Angel Reese in her mind at all when it comes to basketball. But Caitlin Clark got famous in part for her play, but then she did this "you can't see me" celebration after one of her baskets during her college days. And then when Angel Reese's team beat Caitlin Clark in the championship, after the game's over, Caitlin Clark's just standing there. Normal people go and celebrate. Caitlin Clark has done nothing to Angel Reese, by the way. She has not taunted any of his players. Even when she celebrated, she didn't direct it at anyone. Angel Reese is showing a disgusted look at Caitlin Clark and doing this and pointing in the ring. And It was just so ridiculous. Like, you can't find one. Dave Portnoy pointed this out. You cannot find one example of somebody doing the same thing from the men's basketball side of thing. After winning a championship, game's over, taunting another person who didn't even really do anything to them. Like, mm-hmm. you just can't find it. It's yeah. so absurd and so obnoxious. So anyway, that's where it all started, and it keeps going. And Angel Reese has basically, I say Jussie Smollett because they're saying now, oh, they're investigating claims of racism. What? What are you talking about? They didn't say what happened. They didn't say she heard something. They're just saying they're investigating Fever fans. And I just can't buy this, Stu. Yeah. I can't buy it. I think the league's in on it. I mean, this is, I will, what person in 2025 that's a basketball fan is throwing a racial slur at the other team? We all know every team has black players on it.
Right.
Every team does. This is not some own. This is not some, well, they're the team with the black player. It doesn't work that way. Right. It makes absolutely no sense.
It's not
no one would do this.
It's not the Jackie Robinson days anymore, no. thankfully. So,
no.
You know, and I will say, like, it's interesting because I think the league does benefit, generally speaking, from this rivalry. Like, I do yes. think it is yeah. interesting. It is good to have rivalry. You know, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, right? Like, that was a rivalry of two really equal or close to equal players. It had nothing to do with race. It was not a racial thing. But in this case, it's really like bizarre because Caitlin, it really is one-sided. Caitlin Clark says nothing but like, you know, athlete speak when asked about this stuff. It's very much like, well, you know, just a basketball play and we're just out there and we're competitors and she's a great player and she handles all of these things incredibly well. I mean, she'd probably run for office someday because she's very, yeah. very good at handling these moments. And it's like this one-sided thing where racism's being thrown around. She seems to have nothing to do with it whatsoever. And, like, I think that's what the problem here. It's like, I don't mind them pumping up a rivalry, even though these are not two equal or near equal players. It's one of those situations where the rivalry is good. It gets people more into the game. But bringing in this bizarre racism accusation not only cheapens the entire thing, but also, like, I think hurts the country, like, in a roundabout sort of way. It continues to divide us.
Makes people take sides. Yeah, people, 100%. People have to take sides because of this, because they're just so irritated watching the whole thing. And you're right, Stu. This is like a very manufactured rivalry. Magic and Bird, there actually was some race stuff to that, but that wasn't their fault, right? They weren't pointing to that stuff, Magic nor Bird. But the reason they were rivals is because they kept being in the NBA finals every year, and they were both amazing players, and they were the best two players in the game at the time. Angel Reese is not a good basketball player. She's just not. She's not. She does absolutely nothing that impresses me. Like, she ends up tallying like rebounding numbers.
Yeah, she does.
But half of that is because she bricks 400 layups and get them. I play in an old man pickup game now, and it's the joke when someone's, you know, we're all old guys now. We can't. I mean, we're basically bricking all of half our layups too. But whenever somebody like misses three of them in a row and like they keep getting their own rebound, they yell out Angel Reese.
And again, that's great for the WNBA. The fact that like people would even know who she is a good thing. Yeah. If they would play this up without that element, I think it would be fine. I will say, I mean, I hate to ask, Dan, are all the old dads white? Is that really what's going on here? They're going after Angel Reese because of their race.
Yeah, I guess we're all racist. No, I mean, there's a mix there at this game. I mean, this is what happens in basketball, Stu. I don't know if you're aware of this.
Yes, not all white people.
Not a lot of white. The white guys, it's not the majority in this arena.
Yes. That's
so, again, which boggles my mind as to how this is sort of the claim.
Yeah,
that's
it's
now.
It's a stupid claim, and it's one that doesn't need to happen. Let me give you one more story here before we go. This one's, of course, special to me. I was happy about it. The Tush Push, NFL, the Tush Push not going to be banned. Big vote on that the other day. The Eagles, of course, are the ones most famous for doing it, although some other teams do it as well. Not as well, I will say. They had a vote on this. The owners voted, I think it was 22-10 to ban it, but they needed 24 votes. You know, look, I can see why people don't think it's the, like, it's the most exciting play in the world. I get that. It's, you know, it's like a rugby scrum. That being said, like, I just feel like if I'm watching another team who goes, does something within the rules that becomes dominating, they do it better than everybody else. Other teams try it and aren't as successful at it. At the end of the day, if you're voting no to ban that, it just feels weak to me. It feels like weak sauce. Like, go out there and freaking step up and stop it. If you can't stop Steph Curry from taking near half quarters or logo threes, go out and guard him out there. I don't care that he came up with a new play that no one was doing before. Just the idea, and this is the Packers mainly, it's just like, it's weak. It's like, I just can't imagine Vince Lombardi would be doing this.
They only missed it by two votes, so yeah. It's not. Let me ask you this, Stu. Would you be this bullish on this if you were not an Eagles fan?
I think so. I might be annoyed by the play. That's why I say I can understand it's being not, annoyed by the play. But like,
this is,
I would want my team to freaking step up and stop it, right? Like, that's what, like, there's a lot of plays that are difficult to stop.
Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Why do they not allow a guy to jump over the defensive lineman?
Why
can't you do that?
Well, I mean, that's a somewhat new development, but
on the kick. Right? Why can't you do that?
I mean,
this is what I don't like about the play is it's like this. Mm-hmm. It's a planned shoving of another player. Like, that's usually like in basketball. Like, when I was in college, my teammates and I used to joke around and we came up with this way to like fake sort of like, if we were right next to a guy, they'd jump and you'd kind of give him a little boost on the hips. And if you timed it right, you could send a guy flying another foot or two higher and we're all dunking it all over the place. And so we thought we came up with this great idea. I could actually dunk it too, but yeah. You could dunk a lot better that way.
Sure.
But we thought, we're going to do this in the game. And then we find out, oh no, that's a travel. They will call a travel on you if you do that. But like, why? So to me, that's sort of what this play feels like. And to your point, if everyone starts doing this, this is what I say. Like, okay, the Eagles they've found a glitch in the system. They've got a guy who can squat 8 million pounds. Well, if every team's like, well, I guess this gives us such an advantage, we all have to do it. And let's just imagine the NFL with every quarterback now has, you know, gigantic super quad legs and they're just pushing 4 yards every time. It would be terrible to watch. Absolutely horrible. And annoying and not fun at all. And it'll feel like rugby, not football. And then, so that's where I don't really care that one team. I mean, they exploited the system. It's fine. It's just doesn't look like a football play to me. And it looks like a rugby play. And
I'll grade just some of that. I will say, I think, you know, first of all, what you're saying with the quad thing is you're against players working out. So I'm not against it.
What I'm saying is if everyone did it and then all we were seeing were a bunch of guys lining up and shoving each other back and forth to see who could shove the farthest, it just wouldn't be fun to watch.
I understand that. But I will say they did try to do it and they were not as successful. Also, I will say the year before the Eagles started doing this, they were also doing quarterback sneaks and being very, very successful with it. So I wasn't that worried about it and that, like, you know, the Eagles were going to start losing games because they couldn't do the tush push. But on the other hand, like, you know, the fact that Jalen Hurts is strong is like part of the game. Like, you put strong people in positions where strength helps, and that's what you're supposed to do.
But the reason it works is not just because he's strong. Like, I would have zero problem with it if three people weren't behind him shoving him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, and as I said, they were doing that before. And, you know, Tom Brady, right, was one of the most successful quarterback sneakers of all time, and he's got legs like thinner than ours. So, you know, granted, I understand. It's not the most exciting play. I will say, and you've been in the stadium with me for some of these games.
Yes, I know. I shamed myself in cheering for the Eagles.
When it happens, when they line up in that formation, it's not a bad reaction from the crowd. The crowd goes crazy, not just in the Eagles stadium, but even at opposing stadiums, because it's kind of like this legendary play now. And like, even the people want it to be stopped, obviously, in the opposing stadiums. But
all right, this is I will say here, your view on this, Stu, is somewhat fogged by the fact that you are an Eagles fan.
People like the drama.
Because I'm not saying there's not drama, a little bit of drama there, but I will say, as someone who is not an Eagles fan, when I really want them to lose and I see them line up, I'm like, come on.
Right. No, it is frustrating. And that's, you know, again, not the Eagles' job to make the opposing fans.
I don't fault them for doing it. Right, I just think that I just don't think it's crazy that they're trying to ban it. I don't I don't think necessarily.
It's the stupid. You're the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, let's
Lambeau Field. Like, I just step up and stop a play. All right, I gotta go. Dan, we're way too late here. Dan Andrews, managing editor of CBN News, wrong on this issue, but right on so many others on the CBN Quickstar podcast. Dan, get over there and subscribe. Dan, thanks so much.
All right, thanks, Steve.
This weekend, Memorial Day is going on, of course, on Monday, but you can spend a little, maybe start tomorrow, I don't know, indulge in an amazing story about grit, redemption, and good old-fashioned family values. And trust me, you want to see this one in theaters. This is Angel Studios, the team behind King of Kings and Homestead, Sound of Freedom. It's called The Last Rodeo. It's the action-packed story of a retired rodeo legend who straps back in for one last ride, risking it all to save his grandson. The movie is about healing broken bonds. It's about facing the past. It's about proving that, you know, real courage means fighting for the ones that you love. We had Neil McDonough in studio on the radio show just the other day. He's the star of this movie. You know, he's awesome. You've seen him in 100 different things, including Suits, which is where I love him from. But anyway, he's been in a million different things. Theaters are selling out fast. Don't miss this movie. It's coming out this weekend. Angel.com/Stu is where you can go to get your tickets. They're selling out pretty fast, so don't miss it. Angel.com/Stu. It's The Last Rodeo in theaters tomorrow, May 23rd. Get your tickets at angel.com/Stu. Well, you'd be excited to hear Bidenomics is working. That's right. Memorial Day gas prices could hit lowest level in more than two decades. Thanks, Joe. $3.08 Memorial Day, possibly sub $3 later this summer, according to Gas Buddy. Very good. I have to take a long road trip this weekend to go to a travel baseball tournament weekend. So that'll be a lot of fun. And it'll be nice to not pay tons and tons of cash for that trip. There's so much news today, honestly. Huge stories. In fact, this one of international importance. Two staff members of Israeli embassy killed in a shooting near Jewish Museum in D.C. I mean, this is like a lovely young family, a couple that I guess were on the verge of being engaged and just gunned down for no reason. And I will say not for no reason, a very specific reason, which was free Palestine, free Palestine. Apparently that's what they were chanting before they shot and murdered, executed these young people who, you might be interested to know, really aren't the ones setting Israeli policy in the Middle East, but they got executed for it anyway. Of course, even if they were the ones putting that policy into place, it would not make any sense to execute them. Horrible, horrible thing. And, you know, this is just what the situation is right now. This violence is being carried out, and you've got a one party who is basically, cheering it on feels a little strong, but honestly, after what happened with the United Healthcare CEO, I think it's actually pretty accurate. I'm sure Taylor Lorenz is thrilled today. That's just a guess, but my guess is she is. Divided Supreme Court rejects public religious charter school in Oklahoma. This is a bit of a surprise, I guess, in that it came down to there's only eight justices here. This is the thing that everyone's leading with, is that Amy Coney Barrett had recused herself from this. So there's only eight, and we wound up 4-4. We're not sure who the fourth one is. I got a guess for you, John Roberts. But there was three other justices that, of course, were on the liberal side against four. It could have been Kavanaugh. I would not be surprised if it was Kavanaugh, but we don't know because of the way this particular ruling was released. They don't tell you who the justices are. There will be another challenge to this. First Liberty Institute, who we love, was responsible for getting this up to the Supreme Court. There will be another challenge to it. With a full Supreme Court, I think there's a good chance with Amy Coney Barrett that this winds up winning the religious rights causes. But as of right now, we are in this goes back to the lower court ruling. So kind of a loss for the freedom of religion side of the argument this time. Back in a second. Okay, so here's what happened. Olivia Jaquith, she showed up to work. She works at a local news station in Albany, New York, for the CBS affiliate. And she showed up to work quite pregnant, which is not usually a surprise. Usually when you get to that point, you're kind of aware of it. And she was. However, she was not aware of exactly how the day was going to go because, I will say, she started the broadcast and this happened.
Good Wednesday morning. I'm Olivia Jaquith.
And I'm Julia Dunn. We do have some breaking news this morning. Literally. Yes. Olivia's water has broke.
That's right.
And she is anchoring the news now in active labor.
Early labor. Early labor.
We've been doing the contract. She's now, you know, timing her contractions.
We'll see. I'm going to pay attention.
What, 2 minutes apart?
No. There was one. But it's been a few minutes since then. So we're still in good shape.
I mean, that's kind of impressive, right? Shows up. I mean, gosh. Like, if I break a fingernail or something, like, I'm just leaving. I mean, I'm out of here. Like, I screw your news. But pretty impressive from there. Congratulations to her. BlazeTV.com/Stu, by the way, to subscribe. Do it now.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.